I call the Senate Resources meeting to order. Today is February 13th, 2026, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. Committee members present, Senator Rauscher, Senator Myers, Senator Dunbar, Senator Klayman, Senator Kawasaki, Vice Chair Wilikowski, and I'm Chair Giesel. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and Renzo for keeping the records and keeping the audio going. Today we have one item on our agenda, and that's Senate Bill 158, Cook Inlet, New Administrative Area. And so we'll be taking this bill up for our first hearing, and I would welcome Senator Jesse Bjorkman to the table, along with Conrad Jackson, his staff, to present the bill to us. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Wilikowski, and members of the esteemed Senate Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Senator Jesse Bjorkman, and I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. In short, Senate Bill 158 is a technical bill that proposes a new administrative area be established on the east side of Cook Inlet, where Eastside SetNet permit holders have fished for many decades. Gillnets have been used to some degree in the waters of Cook Inlet for thousands of years. SetNetters have fished between traps in the early days of commercial fishing. After fish traps were outlawed, independent fishermen continued to catch salmon with gillnets to be sold at the canneries. For over 150 years, salmon caught on the east side of Cook Inlet have been feeding people both locally and all over the world. This rich renewable resource fed and provided financial support for local families, economy of the Kenai Peninsula and much of Alaska, as well as many businesses. Beach sites taught generations of kids a strong work ethic and helped maintain cultural ties to prior generations. As increased pressure from other user groups have increased, the SetNetters who have fished the east side of Cook Inlet have been subjected to reduced number of fishing opportunities, also known as fishing periods or openers. Since 2017, the implementation of paired restrictions have had even more of a drastic impact on the fishery. In Cook Inlet, paired restrictions means that certain fishing activities, like sport fishing for king salmon, means a closure of the sockeye salmon fishery for SetNet fishers. It means they're automatically closed to sockeye fishing when king salmon fishing in river is closed. The target species of these SetNet fishers are red salmon or sockeye. Their catch of kings is very, very small in comparison, especially when we measure and account for the kings that are returning to the Kenai and Kasilof rivers. However, even though this catch of Kenai and Kasilof-bound kings is small, their fishing opportunity is reduced to zero or nearly zero with these closures. The closures in the current management plans are unique to Eastside SetNet fishermen. However, they are in the same administrative area as permit holders in much of the rest of Upper Cook Inlet, and that's really why this bill is needed. The permit holders who have fished these six statistical areas, which make up the new admin area proposed in Senate Bill 158, have and continue to be managed uniquely. The areas they have fished for generations are shut down, while other areas in Cook Inlet continue to fish for the same species of sockeye salmon. This is quite a unique situation. This bill does not propose to change the allocation of fish in Cook Inlet. The bill does not propose any changes to the fishery itself. All the bill does is asks the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission to create a new admin boundary area around the unique fishery of the Eastside SetNetters in the upper sub-district of the central district of Cook Inlet. It will allow the commission to more easily manage the permits and allow opportunities for self-determination of those permit holders inside of the new area. Madam Chair, on the phone we have invited a couple of permit holders to speak to the committee, and their families have been significantly impacted by management plans, and they will continue to be impacted unless we offer them some opportunity for change. We also have in the room Glenn Haight, the chair of the CFEC, and his agency would be tasked with administering this bill.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Would your staff be willing to take us through a sectional?
Yes, absolutely.
Great. Mr. Jackson, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman. As the senator just described, Senate Bill 158 merely asks the commission, the CFEC, to redraw some lines on a map. First section of the bill amends uncodified law of the state, basically saying that this action is in the public interest. In section two, the two new subsections that are added, first C, describes the new admin area, which is made up of the six statistical areas that you see highlighted in yellow on the last page of the packet. The second subsection D establishes that a person currently fishing in one of those statistical areas does not automatically begin fishing in the other one. It requires that CFEC issue a new permit for that specific new administrative area. Section 3 allows the commission and provides how the commission will determine who holds that set net permit in Cook Inlet, the original areas, and establishes that they will be reassigned a new permit. Fourth section creates an appeals process should there be an issue or confusion or concern about the ability of someone to receive a permit in the new area, and allows for a provisional permit until that appeal is resolved. The final section is an effective date clause, which, Madam Chair, should the committee move the bill forward, we had asked that that be changed to January 1st, 2027.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for Senator Bjorkman or Mr. Jackson? Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 1, adding this new section that establishes that it's in the public interest, why do we need that in there? Is there some outstanding court case that requires that kind of finding? Or, you know, in theory, everything we pass is in the public interest if we're doing our job right, one would hope. So why do we have to have that in there?
Thank you for that question through the chair to Senator Dunbar. That language there, I think, chiefly resides in that place to settle this question of special and local legislation. So as we look at what needs to be done in this area, it is specific to this one area. And I think we need to establish that in order for these fishing permits, which have sat largely idle for many years now, they can have some opportunity to commercial fish with dip nets now if they so choose. However, the scale and viability of that as far as an economic interest to maintain income is very low. If we want to see any economic opportunity on this very abundant resource, which are Cook Inlet red salmon, we need to have enabling legislation to allow this new admin area to be drawn. And it is a narrowly focused bill, and to satisfy any restriction of special and local legislation, we find that this action is needed as indeed in the public interest.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing this forth, Senator. A question about the existing permits that are there. Are like what volume of permits are currently out there? How many of them are fished? And then I've got a follow up after that.
Thank you. And I think Mr. Haight can probably speak to this more directly than I am. So I'll just speak to it in general terms, and then maybe Mr. Haight can talk to it more specifically. But my memory serves that there are a little over 400 permits currently. And the vast majority of those permits have not fished in some years. They were very, very limited openers that occurred very late in the season last year, much later than even the management plan allowed for. And because of the lateness and the restricted nature of those openers, very small, very, very small contingent of set nets actually went into the water. a few more of those permits, fish using the dip net provision that was provided by the board a few years ago. But that is, again, a fractional amount of the amount of permits that actually exist.
Follow up, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. And then, so if there's 400 permits currently, and then would the idea, if this is being through this new administrative area, any of those permit holders could get another permit, they just have to reapply?
And then through the chair to Senator Kawasaki, as the process goes forward, that really is up to the individual permit holders about what they would like to do. If it is true that the permit holders in the new statistical area want to have some kind of permit reduction that they direct themselves, then it would be up to them about how many would participate and how many would want to keep participating in the fishery. So if permit holders wanted to keep participating in the fishery, retain their permit, they would have the ability to do so if they had fished in the area in the past.
So, follow up?
Yeah, I guess. So my question, again, is if there's a permit holder now and they want to continue fishing, they would have to reapply. And then would it still be open to other people to apply for that permit within the time frame of the bill?
Through the chair to Senator Kawasaki, the answer to your first part of your question is yes. If they are a holder of a permit and have fished in those statistical areas, they are eligible to receive a permit in the new area. If they have not fished in that area previously, for a period of years, they will not be eligible to receive a new permit. However, they could purchase a permit from another holder of a limited entry permit if they wanted to, but they could not apply for a new permit.
So
follow up.
Yeah, follow up. I'm just trying to understand the purpose of the legislation. So there's 400 permits currently. Some of those permits are not utilize now. Everybody who has an existing permit would be able to reapply for a permit again. And then I guess the people who either missed the deadline or people who, I guess the clarification is that you said that there are certain people who don't fish the permits. So they're still able to keep their permits, even though they may have not have fished it in a couple of years. Or are you saying that they would not keep their permits?
Mr. Jackson, would you like to field that one?
Yes, thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, there are provisions in the bill that deal with, in fact, it's in Section 3, that talk about the transition of a permit, currently held permit, from someone currently fishing in those six statistical areas, and their ability to transition to have a new permit assigned to them in the what will be the new administrative area. There are certain dates that are required to have, they have to have had the permit at some point in the recent past. If someone was to come in tomorrow and buy a permit, fairly unlikely given the opportunity to make money at this point with that permit, they would have more of a challenge in being reassigned that new permit. But they could certainly purchase a newly reassigned permit from an existing permit holder.
Okay.
Thank you. Follow-up?
I guess I'll just wait until their testimony. Maybe I have questions then. Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions? All right. Seeing none. Thank you. So I think it'd be good to have Mr. Haight come up first, if that's all right. Senator Bjorkman, I also see on your invited list a Sarah Frostad. She is not online. Is she in the room?
No, ma'am.
Okay. I'm just informing you, she's not online.
Thank you for letting me know.
All right. Mr. Haight, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of Senate Resources, for the record, my name is Glenn Haight. I serve as commissioner and one of the commissioners and chair of the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. Thanks for having me today. Appreciate it. Senator Bjorkman and Mr. Jackson really covered a lot of what I would have had to say, including background. So maybe what I could do is just speak to what CFPC would do technically with the bill and then maybe answer some of your questions and see if I can help a little bit. Yeah. So it is fairly simple from our perspective. We would need a proposed regulation. It would change our administrative areas. It's in reg, just according to what we have here. And we would spell out an application period. Because you're going to be going through a limited entry process. That's what we're doing here. And so different from the other limited entry processes in the past where you judge people's application based on economic dependence or past performance, this bill spills out what we're supposed to look at. And these are items that Fish and Game tracks. So it's very simple. They have lists. So our work is pretty basic in terms of who gets to fish in this area if they apply. The other element to it is that if they don't like what we come up with, instead of going through our adjudication process, which can be costly and quite lengthy in limitation processes, they're to go to Superior Court. So it alleviates us of that extra effort. So that's why you'll have a zero fiscal note on this. Madam Chair, I'll try to address Senator Kawasaki's questions if I can.
That would be great.
Back up a little. So in the Cook Inlet area at large, there's about 750 permits. Set net permits. Some people fish in the Northern District. There's people that fish in the West Side. And you've got about 340 people with about 440 permits. You can permit stack in this fishery. So we're looking at 340 people. About 440 permits is the body. You asked about have they been fishing. Going back 5 years, 2021, they fished early. I think they were stopped from fishing the peak, which is the end of July. So those that have set net sites closer to the mouth of the river were effectively stopped from fishing. They didn't get to fish, really. Same thing in 2022. And in 2023, until now, all set net sites are not fishing right from the start. So people are still registering, getting buoy tags. Some may have fished in 21 and 22. There's been a dip net opportunity, but not everyone's doing that. So there's a group of people here that have traditionally fished here. They've maintained their status here. Those are the people that will be applying for a permit. They would get that if they met the requirements. But other people in Cook Inlet that hadn't been fishing on the east side would not be eligible. But they would still continue to fish where they have been. There's been very little migration for a number of years. Board of Fish at one point, maybe mid-90s, it said you need to pre-register where you're going to fish and you can't move. You used to be able to move all over the inlet before during a fishing season, but at some point they put a halt to that. So people have been pretty well set in their sites generally. If that answered your question, I don't know.
I think so.
Senator Kawasaki, any other questions?
No.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I'm understanding the bill sponsor correctly, primarily, the concern here is people fishing for reds, but we're having to close the fishery because of kings. So I guess the question is, if we're going to split it into two fisheries, are we anticipating then having fewer closures, or are we worried that you might still end up having to close both fisheries? Just trying to make sure that we're going to have the intended effect.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, Senator Myers, let's see if I can answer this. So. You know, these folks that fish on the east side, they're fishing around the Kenai and the Kasilof. That's what they're targeting. And those fish, you know, set net sites are anchored generally to shore, but they're a near shore fishery. And those sockeye migration patterns is going to run the coastline. Okay. Pretty specifically, they know the migration pattern pretty well. And the king salmon run the same way. That's the problem, right? But the west side and the northern district are catching different fish generally. I would imagine they catch a Kenai sockeye every once in a while, but they're generally catching fish bound for the northern rivers or western rivers. So they're catching different fish. So you're not seeing closures on the west side and northern district like you are on the east side. Hmm. I mean, they're getting shut down. They're not fishing, period. Well, they got a little opening last year. But anyways, two different management regimes kind of going on for the same set net group.
Okay.
For Cook Inlet, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Follow up, Senator Myers?
Yeah, and just one other quick question. I understand, not something I know a whole lot about, but I understand over the last couple of years there's been some arguments between the state and the feds on management of the Upper Cook Inlet. How do we anticipate this bill impacting that?
I can only just through the chair, Senator Myers offers some just some observations. I'm not involved in management, but that's federal waters is 3 miles offshore, and so it doesn't impact the set net operators. It would impact the drift fleet that's fishing, and I don't. This bill wouldn't impact that at all.
Okay,
that I could see. Yeah,
understood.
Senator Rocher.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to understand now, this bill just pertains to this area here and it segregates it from the others.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Rocher. Senator Rocher is pointing at a map that's showing the various districts on Upper Cook Inlet, and highlighted are the ones that are impacted. Yeah, that's the technically the upper sub-district of the central district. We call it the east side. And yes, that would be your new admin area.
Hello. And yes. So the reason for the segregation?
Well, one of the things that this group has been looking at, and you can harken back to former Senator Majicki's bill, start in 2018, he had a bill, and the thought was to do a buyback for this particular region. And in order to do that, if you did a buyback, you would do it for the entire group, and so it would expand to the folks who fish the west side and northern district, but they aren't the ones that are feeling the weight of these closures. And so if you have a new admin area, then they can do a buyback specifically for that area. They can do a lot of other things too, but that's one value to it.
Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. Haight? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. I guess if the overall is to prevent incidental or bycatch of the king salmon, how will this accomplish that goal? Is it just because there's going to potentially be less permits, or will it be that the CFEC could control the level of new permits that are out there? I'm guessing that the Board of Fish, when they do closures, they probably base it on the fact that there might be 400 permits fishing. And then if there's just less permits, there's less of a potential loss. Is that the case? Or is that, I mean, I guess it's for the sponsor of the bill too, but for you, Mr. Haight.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I'll do my best. It's starting to really get into fish and game territory and fisheries mm-hmm. management. I think if there's less, if you had a... if you were able to eliminate some of the permits and the fishing pressure, it might make it more palatable to do the fishery. But I really wouldn't be in position to tell.
All right. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. To the extent you know, would this bill, if it passed, result in more kings going into the river or less kings? Would it result in more reds going into the river or less reds?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. Just from sitting in bleacher seats, I don't know that as long as you've got a king salmon escapement problem in the Kenai, that this fishery is going to open, right? I don't think it's going to open in any meaningful way. It's hard for me to see that from what I've observed. If you open the fishery, there'll be less sockeye going into the river for sure because they target sockeye. I think you need to resolve the king issue first before this fishery can start taking place.
Follow-up? I'll go to Senator Clayman.
You're on the commission today. Is the commission taking a position on this bill, or are you here for information purposes only?
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Clayman. We're neutral to the bill, but certainly, concerned for the folks that fish on the east side.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. And then just to clarify exactly, if this bill were to pass, how CFEC would reach out to the current permit holders? How would they distinguish between a permit holder that's been fished recently and not fished, making sure the opportunities of a permit holder, they retain that permit? Sort of like what I don't really know what the dates are in here and how they sort of systematically work out, but I guess CFEC would reissue all these new permits based on who's reached out to you and based potentially on who's fished them recently.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. I feel like the application process would be pretty simple. We would definitely notice it in newspapers and do PSAs on it. But the criteria are spelled out here. Things like, did you get a buoy tag? Did you actually fish? Some of that. Did you register? You have to register to fish the east side. And that's Fish and Game has all that information. So we would get that from them. We might ask the individuals to provide some information, but nonetheless, we would still have it And then with that and with their application to apply for this, we would, it's pretty fairly easy to determine who would be receiving a permit.
Senator Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One more time. You said you were you're interested in the bill, but you're concerned for the West, people on the West Side. Now, what's the majority consensus on the West Side?
Through the Chair, Senator Rauscher, if I said West Side, I misspoke. I meant the East Side. That's who we're talking about.
I thought you said West. I'm sorry.
Forgive me. I did.
Okay. But what do the people on the West Side?
Through the chair, Senator Rauscher, that's a good question. And I haven't heard much from people on the West or the Northern District, which I'd be curious to hear what they would have to say, but I have not heard much from those groups.
Follow up, Senator Rauscher?
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. I see no other questions, Mr. Haight. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So now we will go to invited testimony. And I will call on Gary Hollier. Gary is calling in from the Kenai, and he is an East Side set netter. Mr. Hollier, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can.
Great.
I can. Loud and clear. Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the Senate Resources Committee, and a special thanks to Senator Bjorkman and Conrad Jackson. I am Gary Hollier. I'm a 72-year lifelong resident of Kenai. I own and operate a multi-set net permit operation in Cook Inlet, our multi-generational family fishing business, set nets on North Kalaponski Beach just south of the Kenai River. I started fishing this area in 1971. I received an original set net permit for Cook Inlet in 1974 from CFEC. Our family set net operation now owns 8 permits, all held by family members. I have fished this area for 54 years. For many years, there has been legislation brought forward to the state legislature to help the Eastside Set Net fishery find solutions to our fishery to remain viable. For the better part of the last 15 years, the Eastside Set Net fishery has been under considerable duress. The biological and more so political climate has brought our fishery to its knees. The Eastside Set Net fishery in 2018, 20, 21, 22, and 23 have been declared federal fishing disasters. 24, 25 fishing seasons have also met the criteria for disasters. In the 2025 season, under the run size that came in over 4.6 million, the in-river goal was 1.6 million late run sockeye to the Kenai River. 4.2 million crossed that counter. On February 11th of 2026, ADF&G had an emergency order number 2 closing the Eastside Set Net Gillnet fishery for the 2026 season. If we do get to fish, as we did last year, 2 8-hour periods, we would fish with approximately 5% of our gear that's allocated to people that can fish with dual permits. I urge the members of the Senate Resource Committee to pass SB 1915-81. This bill is a small step but desperately needed to help the Eastside Set Net fishery in making the Eastside fishery its own section. It would give the 400 small business owners in this very unique fishery some ability to self-regulate its fishery. We could try to come up with ideas to help ourselves. SB 158 is simply an administrative function by legislature. The Commercial Fishery Entry Commission has the authority to make these changes in the set net fishery in Cook Inlet, as Glenn Haight has brought out, and he has been very instrumental in this process. Additionally, I do not believe there will be any fiscal note to the state of Alaska while passing SB 158. Eastside set netters are made up of 86% Alaska residents. 80% live in the local area. Please pass 158 out of committee, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Hollier. Do committee members have any questions for Mr. Hollier? Senator Kawasaki has a question for you, Mr. Hollier.
Thank you for being online, Mr. Hollier, and you've got some experience having set net in the region. I'm just curious, how often are kings incidentally caught through nets, through a set net?
It's a rare occurrence. I've been fishing for 50 years. We kept 99% of my harvest is sockeye salmon. If I never caught a king salmon, it would be too soon, but unfortunately they run together. I have been very instrumental in pushing the theory that kings run deep. So a standard set net is 45 meshes deep net. It is 18 feet deep at slack tide. I have pushed in 2014 and it went into regulation to fish 29 mesh deep nets. So at slack tide, you're only fishing 12 feet deep, sir. And when the tide starts running, you're fishing considerably deep. So the Eastside Set Net has come out with many different ideas to try to alleviate this problem. One was these beach seine proposal here last year that the Board of Fish shot down. And it will probably be brought up here again, but there are some avenues. But like I said, the political climate isn't very well. But to answer your question, 99% of my proceeds is sockeye salmon, sir.
Follow up, Senator Kawasaki.
And one more, Mr. Hollier. The what about net size, mesh size? Is that something that has been used on the east side set net fishery?
Yes, sir. It used to be, you know, we could fish 8-inch mesh and target king salmon. Now we're down to under this, under the Stock of Concern Management Plan, which was implemented, I believe, in 2025, we're restricted to 4.5-inch web at 29 meshes. And it's one net per person, one net, not one net per permit. So my 8 permits are stacked. I have 4 family members that owns 2 permits, but because it's one net per person, we lose 50% of our gear right away. The other 50% is 29, is 2/3 of the area, and the web is 4.5 inches. So we are targeting Kenai Kasilah stocks. I should say that yesterday in 12th of 26th, the Department of Fish and Game came out with an escapement, an excellent escapement of over 4.6 million to Cook Inlet, similar to last year. The Eastside Set Netters were sitting here with some 5-foot dip nets trying to make a living, and it's virtually impossible. So we're dealing with a Board of Fish process. If we could just get this administrative area put in, then maybe we could come up with some solutions ourselves to, one, cut back on the numbers or try to stay in the game. And I appreciate your comments, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. I actually did have one more follow-up question.
Yes.
What happens to the king that's bycaught or the Chinook that is that 1%?
That 1% that's caught, well, if we roll them out, a long time ago, I took great pleasure in putting every king in a box. About 1982, I could see the what was happening on the scene, so I instructed my crew, which at that time we fished many nets, to release all live kings. The dead kings we can sell to the cannery. It's a salmon. I have an SO4H permit that allows me to sell salmon. If they're alive, we release them. If they're dead, we sell them to the cannery.
Thank you very much, sir.
Well, thank you. Great questions.
Any further questions for Mr. Hollier? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Hollier.
Thank you, ma'am.
Next up, we'll hear from Greg Johnson. He is also an EastNet set netter. He is calling in from Vancouver today. Mr. Johnson, can you hear us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Very loud and clear. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Yes, and thank you, and thank all the members here today. And my name is Greg Johnson. I've fished in the Eastside Set Net Fishery for 46 years. My sites are love my family sites. We hold 7 licenses, and that means we fish 21 nets in normal years. Under the King Plan, as Mr. Hollier stated, we have some stack permits, so we would be able to fish up to 5 nets. My sites are located directly between within a few feet of the Kenai and the Kasilah River, so in just right between the two. I support Senate Bill 158. I participated in the Board of Fish along with the other people that are going to be on this call and working for multiple solutions over time. we just need another tool to work forward on into, and whether that means shrinking our fishery or modifying in what we do, it's better that we're in our east side set net fashion as opposed to all of Cook Inlet and having to fight interest in western Cook Inlet or northern Cook Inlet or quite frankly down in Homer. Those are the same licenses. They all have their own needs and interests, and ours are unique to us. We certainly have a conservation problem with the Chinook salmon, and that is what is closing us down right now. And hopefully those kings will come back, and that's what will trigger opportunity in the set net fishery, nothing else. And I'm hopeful that will occur. We had a positive return this past year that allowed a couple days of fishing. If there's another 10%, we'll get some fishing time. But my real concern in the long-term health of this fishery is the allocations that have occurred over time. You know, the citizens of Alaska want fish, and they deserve fish, and that costs fish. And that could come from someplace, and in general, that's come from the set net fishery. But we haven't adjusted the fishery size to fit. And this has been going on for 40 years. And we adjust the seasons. We shrink the seasons. But we don't adjust the fleet size. So this kind of mechanism or the bill will hopefully help us be able to work as an industry to create solutions for ourselves. Now, just as an example, and I'm not suggesting we go to this area, but where my fish sites are, at statehood and pre-statehood and at statehood, there were 6 nets registered in that area. And I currently in the same area offshore of them, but in totality, we fished 21 nets. Well, the picture's changed since then. We don't have the allocation share we once did, and let alone the king issues that exist. So, and the one senator spoke to, would there be less kings harvested with this bill? Well, the bill in itself doesn't do anything except for allow us to seek other solutions. But if the fishery were reduced, the harvest rate would be reduced, and therefore we would catch less sockeye and king salmon. And I would thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Johnson? Seeing none, thank you. Next up, as invited testimony, we have Lisa Gabriel. Ms. Gabriel, can you hear us?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, now we can hear you. Welcome, Ms. Gabriel.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair Giesel and the committee members. My name is Lisa Gabriel. I live in Kenai, and I'm testifying on behalf of myself and my family. I've been an Eastside set netter for 39 years. My family owns 3 permits. I also process and direct market a portion of my catch. I'm calling today in support of Senate Bill 158. Senate Bill 158 seeks to create the new administrative area in Upper Cook Inlet to regulate certain commercial set net permits, specifically for that area known as the Eastside set net fishery. This legislation will make the Eastside set net fishery its own administrative area, thus allowing permits to be regulated independently of other set net areas in Upper Cook and Lower Cook Inlet. The statistical areas that encompass the Eastside set net fishery are very different from the other statistical areas, as it includes harvest from 2 of the most prized rivers in South Central Alaska, the Kenai and Kasila, the gems of the Kenai Peninsula. The value of the new administrative area is that it will allow CFEC to determine our fishery participation more easily. We are managed uniquely, and with that, we need an administrative area that reflects the uniqueness of that management. In a fishery resource with unlimited sport, guided sport, and personal use fisheries participating alongside limited commercial set and drift fisheries, we need to identify the best management approach. Senate Bill 158 will allow CFEC to predict the best number of permits participating in the Eastside set net fishery, which will allow fisheries managers to make informed decisions for our fishery year after year to help our historical family businesses thrive again. This bill is our path forward. I urge you today to support Senate Bill 158, and thank you so much for your time.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Gabriel. Any questions for Ms. Gabriel? All right, seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Senator Bjorkman, I don't see Sarah Frostad on yet, and so she was also invited to testimony. So I do have another gentleman. I have a Daniel Norman who has signed up, so I will at this time open public testimony and invite Daniel Norman, calling in from Fairbanks, to offer his testimony. Mr. Norman?
Yeah, hi, Madam Chair. Do you hear me?
Yes, very well. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
All right. Yeah, thanks. My name is Dan Norman. Yeah, thanks to the members of the committee taking some time to address this issue and allow me to speak here. I'm a commercial fisherman, part of a family of set netters in Kenai. I first started fishing when I married into a set net family, and I crewed in 2008, my first year after I came home from a deployment in Iraq. Now I got kids that are fourth generation set netters, and I take a lot of pride in that. My family's livelihood really depends on sustainable, well-managed fisheries in Alaska. I'm here to support 158. You know, it's a pretty common sense step towards improving how we can manage the east side set net fishery. It's incredibly unique biologically, geographically, economically, and definitely politically. And it deserves to be managed kind of in line with these unique qualities. So when the management kind of aligns with how we operate, then we can kind of reduce some confusion and maybe some consistency so that we can manage our, the future of our fishery and help make meaningful decisions going forward to maintain viability. So this bill is not going to expand any fishing pressure or change any allocation or any fishing regulation itself. It's just a way of how we're going to administer the existing fishery who want to participate. And good management kind of depends on precision. So as we recognize this east side as a unique administrative area, we can respond better to escapement needs, conservation concerns. We understand that conservation comes first. Our businesses only survive if salmon are coming back in good numbers. And so as we see this summer is going to have a good sockeye run, but we're already closed because of poor Chinook runs. You know, maybe they'll come in a little better than forecasted, and there's going to be a bunch of people waiting there for that potential. But this bill will kind of maybe help get some more data to change how we do our fishery, provide a little more predictability for 400 family businesses there on the east side that have major investments in permits, boats, gear over the years, and help us make better plans for our future. One size fits all. It doesn't work in cooking. That there's being on the road network, there's just too many people and too political in our area. So we want to just try and have our own stat area, our own administration to help change the rules a little bit so we can work within the confines of what we're given here. So anyway, it's 4158. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Norman, for your testimony. I see no questions. I see no one else online wishing to testify. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 158? All right. Seeing none, I will close public testimony. Senator Bjorkman, could you come back to the table for answering some questions? Committee members, any questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, I have a question. Can you explain what is meant by self-regulating? What does that look like? That's been referred to as one of the benefits of the bill.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the question, Madam Chair. I would characterize that term more accurately, possibly as self-determination about what those 440 or so permit holders want to do with their permits. It would be possible if they were their own new admin area that they could themselves organize a buyback program, which they could raise funds for on their own, and or they could assess themselves some kind of fee or to buy out other permits. They would have self-determination to do that. They could decide on their own without state dollars, without anything else, about what they would like to do with the number of their permits. They could decide to do something, or they could decide to do nothing. That's really what that's meant. They would have the ability, that self-determination, to decide what it is to do with their permits.
Thank you. So when you say they, you are probably referring to the people who hold these 440 permits. So what would that process look like? A vote? Who gets a vote? How many votes? How would that work?
Yes. So the permit holders together with CFEC would constitute a process by which they could decide whether or not to hold a program, and that would occur by a vote of permit holders. Yes.
Very good. Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. You can stay right there. I wanted to call Mr. Haight forward again. I had a question for him, and perhaps committee members do as well.
Madam Chair, Glenn Haight, Commissioner with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. Thank you.
Very good. So, Mr. Haight, it's my understanding that the purpose of CFEC was to oversee the allocation of permits and the allocation of the resource. Mr. Johnson said that there should be a decrease in the fleet size, and that wasn't happening. It's my understanding that that's actually the CFEC's role. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering why the allocations have not been adjusted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good question. You picked up on some of the things that were said there. Yeah, so CFEC has a couple of different functions. One is to limit fisheries, and of course that was done with this fishery in 1975. And the follow-up to do with that is CFEC is to do optimum number studies. And that is to see if it's the right number of permits that are in that fishery. And so through the years, CFEC did not do a lot of these optimum number studies. They were busy limiting fisheries. I think only three were done, and two because of litigation. But more recently, we did – well, in 2019, CFEC tried to do a optimum number study of the Cook Inlet area, and it was the whole Cook Inlet area. It wasn't just this area. For a variety of reasons, that didn't go very well. The data received back wasn't good enough to do an optimum number study. So we took a look at it again in 2022. We did one just on the East Side SetNet group, and we have the report. Can make it available to you. So we've done that work. It's not terribly definitive. It doesn't say this is the optimum number of permits, but because it's based on the price that they might earn, how much fish they can catch, because I can tell you the optimum number of permits on the East Side is when they can't fish is zero. Right, so they have to have some fish to catch. So, I think we can provide some of the information, and we would if they were really moving down the path towards a buyback.
Thank you. Where did you get the data from 2019 when you tried a study?
So, Madam Chair, so often number studies are fairly thorough reviews. You're going to ask individuals, you know, how much they spent on all of their expenses for the last 3 years. I wasn't at CFEC at the time, but 2019 was a Board of Fish cycle, and this was coming out of the blue. There wasn't a lot of trust in why CFEC was doing it. It's a fairly invasive study, and the information they got back wasn't very good. And sometimes people don't keep great track of their expenses. So that was the attempt, and I just did talk to our research staff when I came on in 2022. And they told us that, yeah, the data we received just wouldn't put together a reliable survey, or a reliable study. Would you like me to tell you what we did in 2023?
That would be wonderful.
Okay. So it is unusual fishery. They don't fish in a boat, right? one permit, one boat. So they fish in groups. And so we sent out the survey. We asked three questions, just gut questions. Like, they know this. What are your fixed costs? How much money do you need to break even? And how much money do you want to make once the season's over? And then from there, we could back out a variable cost because we had the break-even cost. And we could come up based on how much they wanted to make per permit. We could figure out what the optimum number study or what the optimum study could be at a certain price, at a certain level of fish. The study outlines this. It's a little easier to read that than listen to me. But we also, because they fished in group, we asked the group leader, generally. We took their information. Mr. Hollier runs his group. So we would use his information. So we received 46 of these responses back that accounted for about 140 permits. So that was fairly reliable. And I would just say that the amount they wanted to make at the end of the day was about $15,000 per permit.
Thank you. Further questions for Mr. Haight?
Madam Chair.
Yes. Yes, Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To add some more specific detail as to your question that you asked Commissioner Haight, one of the reasons why there has not been a permit reduction or permit size is very much because we do not have a specific, clearly defined discretionary new admin area to keep new permits from coming into this area. This speaks to the very heart of the rationale of why the bill is needed. So Mr. Haight and CFEC cannot do their job to reduce permits, because if they reduce permits on the east side, the way the law is currently, other permits could move in there and fish that same water. This speaks to the very heart and need for the bill. So if CFEC is able to do its job to reduce the fleet size from 440 toward the operable number that they came up with, which is close to 100, if they were to do that, which again would need participation from all the permit holders, they need a discrete specific area to keep other permits from moving in. They need this bill in order to do their job.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Mr. Haight, I would like to see that study. If you could send us a link to it, send it to my office. We'll distribute it to the committee.
Absolutely.
Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Is there a value in holding a permit even though it's not being fished?
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. I think that
identify yourself, please, Mr. Haight.
This is Glenn Haight.
Thank you.
Commissioner with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. I think what a lot of folks have been doing, Senator, is hanging on to it with the hope that there might be a buyback. Of course, the hope that the king salmon will recover so they can get back to fishing too. These folks have been at it for quite a long time. They've got infrastructure invested on their sites, cabins, equipment, gear.
So there does appear to be some sort of a value potential there, since there's a limited number of permits now and somebody owns one. The only way to get into the fishery is to be able to buy one from one of them. Okay. Thank you.
And the answer to the question was?
Thank you, Senator. Through the chair. Senator Kawasaki, yes, you can buy one. You can gift a permit to inheritance. And, yeah.
Thank you. Remember, there's a recording. People listening, they'd like to know what the answer actually was. I have a couple more people with questions. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Haight. I'm not suggesting that you do this, but if the CFEC were to reduce the number of permits without us having some kind of established buyback program in place, would it be considered a government taking? I think the answer is yes. And then who would establish the value of the permits as you reduce them? Would it be the courts, or how would that be established?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar. I'll take a step back if I could, because there was a question about process, about how would this go down, right? In the Legislative Salmon Task Force, there was created the authority to have salmon fisheries associations, and it was explicitly to help with fleet consolidation. So if the area was created, you would probably see one of these associations formed, okay? In fact, this group has already formed them. It's lapsed with Congress. That group would then probably go hit the streets and look for funds, look for money to do the buyback, most likely federal government. There was the Southeast Seine, Perth Seine fleet did a buyback. They did it four different times. The first time was with a federal loan program, which they paid back. That's incorrect. The first time was with the federal grant, and then the next three times was with the federal loan program, which they paid back. So how it goes down is a matter for that group to figure out. Now, if they get federal funds to do this, our role would be pretty technical. We'd be asked to provide a lower limit on how far down they could go with a buyback. And then we would provide them the means to retire those permits, which would be an affidavit or some measure. It was done with the Southeast SANE process. First thing.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
I think that Senator Bjorkman is about to answer my question. I'll just put a little bit finer point on it. These permits are issued by the government. They're a creation of the government. The way you're describing it makes it sound almost like your hands are tied, and maybe they are by the law, that you cannot just reduce the number of permits and say this is the number of permits. The other permits are gone. You have the power to create. You have the power to remove. But typically when that happens, the court protects if there's a property interest, and sort of similar to eminent domain almost, where you're compensated fairly for it. But perhaps you're saying that there isn't a process like that you cannot do that, and so that's why you have to go seek federal funds to do some kind of buyback. Again, I'm not suggesting that you should do that. I'm just sort of interested in practically what it looks like and what powers you have or do not have. And I think Senator Bjorkman knows it better. So I'm willing to hear from him, too.
Yeah, through the chair, I could just real quickly respond, and perhaps Senator Bjorkman can help me. There is in statute specifically that the legislature can take a permit back.
The legislature can. Yeah. But you cannot?
I don't feel like we could. And I don't know what scenario we would do that under. Right. The buyback provisions that we have are pretty rigid. We have them in statute. And it's basically the existing fleet buys back the permits through a tax. That's the only mechanism we have. It's not very creative, and so that's something that might use some work one day. But it does say that CFEC can help facilitate a plan. And so if this group was to develop that plan, we would work with them. My apologies for the unclear answer earlier.
No, I think it makes sense that the statute probably correctly limits the government's ability to sort of take back that which they created.
Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Senator Dunbar. Mr. Haight is correct that there has not been one instance of the government of the state of Alaska forcibly taking a limited entry permit from a permit holder. The gear reductions and fleet reduction, I should say, the fleet reductions that have been done already and are envisioned by this bill are voluntary, strictly voluntary. No one would give up their permit unless they wanted to give up their permit. And so that, I think, is an important clarification here, is CFEC facilitates this plan that is 100% voluntary. And to Senator Kawasaki's question a bit earlier, I think most people that have permits still on the east side, they're hoping that they get to fish again. They're hoping that enough king salmon come back so that they get to fish. And to Senator Wilikowski's earlier question, if that were to happen under the current sockeye management plan, so if enough kings come back and we revert back to the sockeye management plan, a reduced fleet of set net fishers mean that more kings and more sockeye get back to the rivers if the fleet is reduced. That's if kings come back and you now are operating on the current sockeye management plan. And so that's like the outcome of the bill, and there has to be management decisions and allocation decisions made by the Board of Fish, which this bill does not broach, and it should not. But this gives CFEC the ability to facilitate a 100% voluntary process so that the permit holders on the east side can self-determine what they would like to do with their permits.
Well, I'm going to follow up with a question as to what you just said. A voluntary buyback, who does the buying back?
Thank you for the question, Madam Chair. So fishermen who wish to give up their permits would receive compensation from a pool of money that they would be able to raise on their own. They would have to go out and seek distressed fisheries grants from the federal government or whomever would like to donate money to that buyback program. They could assess themselves, the permit holders remaining in the fishery, to provide a pool of money to that program or find other forms of funding. But that money would be raised through distressed federal fisheries grants or some other form of money. They would, in a sense, be raising that money so that they could give that compensation to other permit holders in that same fishery. And then those permits would be retired.
Thank you. So in a sense, there would be a limited quantity of money, therefore a limited price allocated to each permit.
That's correct.
Thank you. I certainly recognize the problem. This area was part of my district in 2013, 2014. But I also have been informed about the history of the Southwest Seine Fleet. I think that meant I should have written Southeast Seine Fleet, a buyback, where it's asserted that the buyback prices were exorbitant and unrealistic. So what you're saying is these would have sort of some self-regulation in terms of the price they could ask for the buyback, correct?
That's correct. The money would be a finite pot of money that would be facilitated through CFEC. Again, no state dollars are going into that pot of money.
Thank you. Then I had Senator Klayman with a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for Mr. Haight. Just so I'm tracking, when you all choose to do studies of kind of the current status of the fish, when you have the area in, is all of Cook Inlet instead of separating the east from the west, are you required to own, to study the whole area, or can you today do sub-studies within portions of the current area?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, good question. Oh, we would do the whole, normally do the whole administrative area.
Okay.
Yeah. That doing the study we did for the east side wasn't normal, but we recognized the problem. What happens when you do an optimum number study is you'll put it into regulation, and you would do it for the whole area.
Follow-up, Senator Klayman.
But from a standpoint of trying to figure out what to do with this, if we created this east side area, one of the benefits of doing that is that actually means now the east side becomes the only area you study when you study the east side.
Thank you, to the chair. Senator Klayman, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Further questions for either Senator Bjorkman or Mr. Haight? All right, seeing none. Did you have more to add, Mr. Haight? Did you have further comments?
No, I don't. Oh,
okay. Very good. Senator Bjorkman, any closing comments for today's hearing?
Thank you, Chair Giesel, for hearing the bill and members of the committee. Thank you very much.
Good. Well, thank you. We will set this bill aside and bring it back another time. Thank you, Mr. Haight, for being here, and Senator Bjorkman. So at this time, that's the end of the agenda for today. I do want to just take a moment to thank Ben, who is my intern from Dartmouth College. He staffed the committee today and did an outstanding job. There wasn't much to do, so thank you, committee members. But he's in training. In any case, that concludes our meeting. Our next meeting will be Monday, February 16th at 3:30 p.m. On the agenda that day will be Senate Bill 180, that's LNG import facilities, and Senate Bill 227. This is the governor's tax compact, sales tax, oil and gas tax. So at this time, the meeting will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 4:33 p.m.